First thing I want to say is, again, John Kelly, producer of the Hot Lava podcast, on topic with his graphic, if you're watching. Like, we don't even include him in our rundown because I don't know why, but his picture, his graphic, there it is. Michael King, Kyle Hart, Nick Pivetta, going to be a big topic on today's Hot Lava podcast. Welcome. I'm Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Ryan, where would you like to start before the Cubs series?
I would love to start by talking about pitching. In our last episode, you know, we were a little doom and gloomy, a little concerned based on a really bad turn through the rotation when the Padres were in Chicago and then again in Sacramento to play the A's. Man, things sort of swung the other way, didn't they? Here in a three-game sweep of the Rockies, Padres are now 13-3. At least at home, they're getting the kind of starting pitching that can take you pretty far. And it started with Nick Pivetta on Friday, one of the better pitching performances you might ever see at Petco Park.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nick Pivetta has not allowed a run in 14 and a third innings. He has allowed 4 hits. He's only allowed hits to 2 people since Kyle Farmer was 3-for-3 against him. Kyle Farmer had 5 of the Rockies' 9 hits, by the way, all series here. But yeah, and I would like to say, Ryan, I'd like to disagree that we weren't doom and gloom. We were like, let's watch out for the potential doom and gloom.
Yes.
Because I like to think that we keep things in perspective here. Not that we're not ever wrong. We are. But like we were just talking about, hey, this has not been a good turn through the rotation. What is coming up next is what I thought we were talking about. And heck, you go back to Randy Vasquez's start in the final game in Sacramento, almost did it in Sacramento, the 5 innings, 1 run, still having his walk issues, but 1 hit. The starters in 27 innings over the last 4 games have allowed 1, 3, 1, 2. So that's 8 hits, or is that 7? Whatever. Like, boom. And 1 run, by the way, in that time. So obviously a sub-zero run average. So I love it. I love it. I think a topic we'll cover later, Yuli Gurriel, Jason Hayward. Obviously not as big a swing as the Padres starters from bad to good. But like baseball season, man. April baseball. Like there aren't even trends. There are trends of trends. There are little seedlings, little saplings of trends that we look out for. And then boom, 2 days later, 3 days later, 4 days later, you're like, hey, what was that? When was that that guy couldn't hit?
No, you're right. And again, to put this weekend in perspective, we should be clear. The Padres did not allow a single run to the Colorado Rockies in a 3-game sweep at Petco Park. It's the first time since 1988 that the Padres have recorded 3 consecutive shutouts. It's the first time they've ever done that in a sweep of a team. They're one of just 34 teams since 1901 to sweep a team without allowing a run.
And that's incredible.
It's incredible. I mean, and I think it's so funny, Kevin. I think back to all the bad teams that the Padres were a part of for years and years, all the bad teams that they've played for years and years, and as good as their pitching has been for years, the fact that that had never happened and that the 3 guys who did it, I mean, Nick Pivetta, Michael King, and then Kyle Hart, were not coming off of particularly great starts.
And you're making a great point. And also, too, like it's only been done twice. Like you, as you said, 88 was the last time they went 3 games. They also went 4 games in like 84. It was like 2 games against the Astros, 2 games against the Dodgers. So it wasn't in the same series. That's the only 2 times they've had 3 or more consecutive shutouts. And you go back to when like the game wasn't as offensive, right? And you had more low scoring games. So, I mean, that really is incredible. And it sort of, you know, then overshadows the fact that it was the Rockies. And not only are they terrible, but that the Padres exploited them and their aggressiveness. Like they had 3 really good pitchers that, like when I say really good, like they were able to smartly attack the Rockies and know that, hey, it's cool. The very rare times they were behind like 2-0 or something. It's cool. Like they're going to go after a pitch here. I'm okay. And there's just like, you know, the Rockies just aren't very good. They're just very good. And they were out without Brenton Doyle. maybe somebody else who's fairly decent. Like they have some good players. I will say that. They do have good young players. And that kid who pitched Dolander the game, but man, they're just not good. So I want to make sure we don't get too excited about it, but also say, as you did, like that was historic. And Michael King was absolutely fantastic.
Yep. And again, you know, yes, the Rockies are bad and the Sacramento A's are bad. But, you know, the Padres really struggled, especially early last year, with putting away bad teams. At some point, that's what good teams do, right? Yep. Not to get too big picture here. Good teams win the games they're supposed to win. Good teams win at home. You know, good teams don't waste opportunities. And you know, what we saw in those three games against Colorado, you know, Friday night was a blowout. But Saturday was a little bit tighter. Yesterday, a little bit tight. Like it was a, you know, they didn't make a ton of mistakes. They didn't let bad teams back into games. And you know, that is a step in the right direction. And now they're 13-3, right? Best start since 1998 when they ended up playing in the World Series. And, you know, I think as our Tom Krasnick pointed out today, you know, even if they just play 500 baseball the rest of the way, that's a playoff caliber team, right?
I was going to say.
Yeah. They're in the hunt. There's no chance that they won't be in the hunt as the season rounds into form here.
Right. Now, I think that you just jinxed them. Mark the tape, John. We'll come back to it. No chance. I found that interesting. I haven't read Kraz's column yet. I want to because I know it'll be interesting. Kraz finds some, you know, interesting thing to focus on a lot. He said there's no chance too. And like, okay, we've seen a lot of things in this world, but absolutely great point. You get two games from now, and that's 18 games, and that's one of those divisors. I think that's the right word, but you can divide 162 by 18, and so it's like whatever that is, the 1/8 or 1/6 of the season or whatever, I think it's 18 games. Anyway,
it's 1/9 of the season at 18 games.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. But then you go, so I just like to look at that as a mark, right? Like, okay, we can evenly do this. If they, let's say they split these first two games with the Cubs, they would be 14-4. 500 the rest of the way is 10 over, which is 86 wins.
Right.
Now, we're having fun here. We're getting way too far ahead and like, it doesn't matter. And 86 wins isn't what you're shooting for and blah, blah. But like, that sort of puts in perspective. At some point, remember when it was 7-0 and we were like, okay, you know, the important thing is that they are playing well, right? 5-2, 6-1, 7-0, whatever. It's how are they playing? And Mike Schilt will basically always say that. But at some point, you know, the record does matter. And so, you know, this is a very, very strong start.
Absolutely. And, you know, to a certain extent too, banking wins when you're playing well and you're playing bad teams.
Yes.
Just builds in that much more cushioning for the inevitabilities of the season, right?
The inevitabilities
of you lose players to injury, you get cold, you know, maybe you hit a long road trip and just sort of fall into a funk. You know, teams in the past haven't had that sort of buildup. Again, Kevin, it wasn't that long ago when we were talking about how if the Padres would just start seasons better, they'd be really good, right? They have started this season fairly well. We talked about some of these inevitabilities and some of the things that happened during the course of the baseball season. You know, Friday, when you and I talked, we went, well, if we know one thing, it's Jake Cronenworth's going to play tonight. And then Jake Cronenworth got put on the IL.
I own that, yes. Uh-huh.
He joins Jackson Merrill on the IL. Level of concern here on either guy, and what do you make of the guys who have stepped up with these players hurt?
So I got that wrong last time. But believe me here, because especially after I shouldn't say I got it wrong. I'm not a doctor, but going off what everybody was saying, and then he goes in, you find out he's got this fractured rib. And so I really have sort of tried to take a look these last couple of days about what's the reality. And it turns out you're going to miss Jake longer than you're going to miss Jackson Merrill, almost certainly. We're talking about another 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. weeks that Jake will be out with a rib. You know, those take a long time. Now, he's been a super healer in the past, but like a rib's a big deal. Let's not forget he also hit a home run with a rib. So I'll give him maybe 3 weeks, you know, and say that's possible. Jackson Merrill, you know, while it wasn't a traumatic event, meaning he didn't pull up, say, like Brandon Lockridge did yesterday, right? Probably another move coming today, because you can't pull up like that and then pull, you know, not have a move. But so it wasn't that. That's good. You haven't ever seen him limping. That's good. But he's 21 years old, got a hamstring, very important to the Padres. They're going to be careful with him. It doesn't look like right now, unless I arrive at Petco Park and Jackson Merrill's out there doing a hard jog, right? Because he hasn't done anything yet, right? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about before you ramp up and start playing again, you jog a little harder. You sprint again, you start and stop. Like you move left to right. There's a process in this. And if the process of being on the field and getting back to baseball actions hasn't started, then you can start to do the math and go, well, he's eligible to come off Friday in Houston, but it doesn't look like he will. So that's kind of where we're at with those. The other injury update is Fernando Tatis Jr. has homered in 3 of his last 5 games. The shoulder appears to be fine.
Yeah, I think he'll be just fine. He also
Change what we talked about, right? Doesn't change what we talked about, that you're still watching it.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw it was the home run I think he hit was Friday. You know, as he's finishing through, I'm watching and going, how's that left arm moving as he gets up here, right? And, you know, now obviously you're going to read way too much into all the little things that you see with him. But if he's been affected, you know, certainly wasn't affected in the field, had a really nice play to end, was it Saturday's game with Chris Bryant at the plate, right? Where he continues to rake. Let's talk about Brandon Lockridge for a minute and what other sort of options there are. You're going to need somebody.
I wonder what an option could be. What could one of the options be, Ryan?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, you got outfielders. I mean, Rosario is an option. I mean, what do you anticipate if they need to go get a guy? Who's it going to be?
I think it's the perfect time for Eggy. If you're so freaking high on him and you're about to face 2 lefties, not you. I meant we know that, Ryan, without a doubt. The point you're going to have, if this were the 1970s or 80s, you'd have an Eggy Rosario poster in the background here. But I don't know that they make those anymore. You're facing 2 lefties that sort of bedeviled you last time you faced them. The only run you scored off Shota Imanaga was a Jackson Merrill homer. He won't be playing. I would think Eggy, perfect time for him to come up, face those 2 guys, give him a little run out there. Now, what do you do? I don't think you move Tatis. You don't weaken your outfield to like, if you're going to bring up Eggy, you play him in center, right?
Has Eggy played in center?
He's played like a game, I think, there. So that's a tough call for me. Mm-hmm. But who else do you have? Is it Tyler Wade? He's not going to face lefties. Could be tonight. Right. Probably will be tonight. Is it Connor Joe? Hasn't played center. So maybe you are moving Tatis over and you're putting Hayward or Gonzalez or Joe in right, or, you know, one of those corners, right? Both of those outfield spots in Petco can be a little tricky, left and right, but especially right. So that's why you want to keep Tatis there. But like, who are your center field options? You have options. You like your depth down there. Like Oscar Gonzalez has come up and done well, right? Mm-hmm. You like your depth down there, but your center field depth, don't know about that. So this is a little bit of a tricky one.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it all boils down to how many times do you need to patch this together, right? If Jackson Merrill's coming back Friday, yeah, maybe. I mean, could Oscar Gonzalez play some center? I don't know. Like, you're running out of possibilities, frankly. If this is something that's going to stretch on, you know, you look at guys maybe outside the organization. I am just totally speculating here. But, you know, there are guys out there who have played major league center field. I think of Travis Jankowski being one of them, who are currently free agents. You know, it all depends on how many times you're going to need to run somebody out there in center who's not, you know, these 2 guys. The Lockridge thing, I feel so bad for a guy like Brandon Lockridge. Not only does he makes the club in what was a little bit of a surprise maybe to some outsiders, wasn't a surprise to you, Kevin. He makes the club. He's getting an opportunity to play a lot, playing fairly well, a really good base runner. And, you know, he's got these guys breathing down his neck in AAA, and now he's hurt.
He's getting a hit, you know, and he's laying down perfect bunts for the most part. I can think of one time he didn't get one down, but like he's doing his job. You are correct. And you know what else sucks? Is they were up 6-0.
Yeah.
You know, if you wonder why some of these guys don't go hard to first base on a grounder to third, that's routine, right? Now, Brandon Lockridge does. Tyler Wade does. You know, these guys sort of have to, but that always stinks, right? When it was like, dang, you know, didn't need to leg out that single. I'm not talking about Brandon Lockridge or, you know, ripping him or anything. I'm just saying like, man, it stinks when something like that happens. And it does help explain why. I mean, look, Manny ran in the other day in a fairly close game. Manny didn't run out one of those balls. It'll happen 2, 3, 5 times a year where maybe he could have made it because a fielder bobbled it or something. And he maybe could have been on first base 1, 2, 3, 5 times in a season. Mm-hmm. Or, and it's happened before, by the way, he could tweak his hamstring trying to run out that routine grounder to third. That's kind of the way that I would like people to think sometimes.
Right. It's interesting. I'm on the El Paso Chihuahuas website right now. They only list 2 outfielders as being on their roster. Okay. Tirso Ornelas and Forrest Wall. Now you saw a lot of both of those guys in spring training. Right. Obviously, if you look at guys who they're classifying as infielders who can play the outfield, you get more options. Right. You get Connor Joe, you get Eggie Rosario. But there are not a ton of options in terms of a guy who can cover a lot of ground and play center field, which is why, I mean, I am super curious to see what happens today.
Absolutely. It's a really good question. And I apologize. Had I done a newsletter last night, it's amazing the difference in how I cover a game when I have a newsletter to do and I don't. I'm so lazy when I don't. Like, just covering a game feels like vacation. And like, if I'd had a newsletter to do, this would have been like one of the main topics. Right. So I'm sorry. Right. I'm letting you down today. I have not looked into it. But guess what? Here's the good news. We're going to find out in a couple hours.
Right.
So it's funny. By the time you listen to this, this entire last 5 minutes will, what we did is we gave you background into the thinking, but the answer will already be there of what are they going to do in center field.
It's so funny that you bring up guys who are on the bench and sample sizes and the risks that come with making judgments in April, right? Our last episode, we went in depth about Jason Hayward and Yuli Gurriel. And essentially saying how long before they decide that they have to go get Connor Joe to replace one of these guys or whatever it is. And then both of them go out and really contribute in this series. Jason Hayward hit a ball that might have landed at some point the last 2 days. Crushed it to left field on Saturday. You're getting better at bats, I think, from Yuli Gurriel, or at least better results. Are these guys just rounding into doing what veterans do, or – is this just a counterpoint to, hey, you know, they weren't going to go all season without a hit? What do you think?
Yeah, I also like that we did that because, you know, I think that was under the topics of like things that people that are fans and or not and or cause you can't be both fans or media that are watching a team that you expect to be a championship contender that at the time was 10-3. Best record in baseball. And you say, we're going to nitpick here, right? How long? And I've always said, this is too soon. It's not too soon to talk about it, but it's too soon to make judgments on guys like Hayward and Gurriel. Always thought like May 1st, and I'll still say May 1st, right? But you are absolutely correct. Like, Yuli Gurriel's 3-for-23. All three hits are RBIs. Has a couple walks. It's not great. It's a veteran guy they can run out there. They love what he does sitting over there in between, you know, near Iglesias, Tatis, Machado, in the clubhouse. Yesterday, Bogarts came over from his locker. They were talking, watching the Masters, talking baseball after the game. Like, they love that. It's just way too early to say that about Yuli Gurriel, to say, oh, he's got to go. It's just way too early. Now, if you're screaming Yuli Gurriel's got to go, in May, you may be like peacocking, like, ha ha, I told you.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was pretty easy. 40-year-old guy. Okay. But you also maybe won't be peacocking because Yuli Gurriel could, you know, have 7 hits by then, and 3 of them were game-winning RBIs, and all 7 were RBIs. Like, I mean, like, it's just baseball teams are built around a core and then guys who kind of do the job every once in a while. Now, Jason Hayward, here's the problem with Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward looks like he is swinging through mud, but he always has. And he does when he's on a heater, he looks like that. You can't tell by looking at Jason Hayward that he is a good baseball player, like a good hitter. And there are some really bad stretches. But he also brings a lot to this team and, you know, is playing a decent left field and, you know, gives you a good at-bat, got a few walks. And by the way, he's hitting 300 and since he started 0 for 10 or near 300 since he started 0 for 10. So, yeah, again, all it is proof of what we talked about, which is not too soon to talk about it, but too soon to make a judgment on those guys.
Right. Is it fair to say, real quick, going back to second base, that with Cronenworth out, that this is Jose Iglesias' job to lose and that Tyler Wade will remain in that bench role? Is that the idea?
Yeah. I mean, Iglesias, who seems to be heating up at the plate and has given you almost exclusively good at bats, right? 6, 7, 8 pitch at bats, walks, hits, you know, so that's, it's his job. Now he can move over when Bogart needs a DH day or Manny needs a DH day or an off day. And then Wade comes in, right? So against a right-hander. But no, this is Jose Iglesias' job. And man, he brings a lot to the field defensively. And he's another guy who's sitting over there in that corner, just kind of like talking baseball, building the culture. Like, if you think about it, Gavin Sheets sort of overstated it, but when he was talking about this team, and Gavin Sheets is a guy who is just milking it. He is eating it up after being on the White Sox, right? Sure. Like the encouragement he gets, the ability to go, oh, that's Jose Iglesias, been in the league for a long time. Oh, that's Jason Hayward's got 2 rings or is about to and has been in the league a long time. Manny Machado, oh, wow. Xander Bogaerts, wow. Like, you just go down the line and guys that are on the team have a lot of experience. Yuli Gurriel has a ring, been to 2 World Series. Martin Maldonado, like just winners, guys who have won. It's that's kind of the thing on this team now. And those older guys are a part of that.
Yeah. You bring up Martin Maldonado. To me, one of the mild surprises so far this season is that both catchers seem to be hitting. Martin Maldonado, I knew one thing or 2 things about Martin Maldonado. Great defensive catcher, inept offensive catcher. Could not hit. He's hitting 292, OPS of 708. If he could hit 242 with an OPS of 650, that's a big league catcher, at least here. How internally happy are they with what they've gotten from both these guys so far?
Extremely. And I mean, extremely. And again, small sample size, 38 years old. How's he going to hold up? These are questions that, you know, are unanswered, obviously. Elias Diaz hitting the ball hard, doing well defensively. I mean, they haven't been perfect, sure, but they, I mean, those are 2, I'd say they have their best 2 defensive catchers in a while. And Martin Maldonado, like, cares, man. And the pitchers love him. And they love Diaz too. But, like, they just love Maldonado. You just hear his name dropped in conversations. And what he did for Kyle Hart this week, he ended up catching him. But even before that, just sort of sitting with him in the dugout, like, just talking to him about, like, who he is and, you know, how good he can be. And, like, and Hart knew what he was doing. I thought that was interesting, you know. But, like, don't mean it's bad to hear that, you know, some guy like Martin Maldonado believes in you. And so, like, that's important. Now, it's also important that Jake Cronenworth get back in the lineup and hit like he was, and Merrill get back in the lineup, and that the rest of the guys hit around him so that you can go, because you're 100% spot on. 242 with a 650 OPS, that's just fine if the Padres are who they think they are.
Right. Is this a bad time to tell you that Luis Campusano's hitting nearly 400 with an OPS of 1100 in AAA right now.
Right on. Good for Campy. I mean, good for Campy. That gets his confidence up. That's what I'll say about those numbers, right? Mm-hmm. That must mean he's hitting the ball, right? Mm-hmm. And that's good. Good for him. Like that's what I'll say about the numbers down there and what they can mean for him. Because like I said, Maldonado's 38. Like mm-hmm. one of these guys, if you go through a whole season with just those two catchers, I think that'd be like a surprise, right? So mm-hmm. Ambison will be up again. So mm-hmm. good. Cool.
Yep. He's one of those guys. It's like Connor Joe, I think, and like Tyler Wade, and that's already been proven true. You're going to need those guys at some point, right? It's a 6 month long season. You're going to need those guys at some point.
Yes. Last year was one of the fewest call-ups that they've ever had, the Padres, like mm-hmm. in terms of roster, how many guys actually played. And mm-hmm. I think it really was minuscule. It was amazing for mm-hmm. the like some of the key injuries they had. They mm-hmm. really had some pretty good health, but it right. still was like, I don't know what it, I think I did that story in early September. So there was some more mm-hmm. that came after it. But at that point, it was like 22 mm-hmm. or I'm right. sorry. Well, no, it was, you had your roster and then you had eight more. It was like 34, right? They always say okay. we're going to need the most, the full 40 man roster. And usually it's like 40 to 45 guys. At that point, mm-hmm. they'd use like 34. And it like, right. that was like mind boggling that it was that few. So that just tells you if that was one of the fewest the Padres have ever used, like, you're right. generally at 40 to 45 guys.
Sure. Well, Kevin, we're just wrapping up here. I always try to put you on the spot at the very end. We're going out of left field today.
Oh, boy.
Kevin, this morning, you felt it. I felt it. We had an earthquake. You got any good earthquake stories?
It's a couple I can't tell. No, you know, when I think of earthquakes, because you've been in some, but you grew up here and it's like, oh, okay, right?
Yeah. Right.
I moved to Los Angeles, 3 or 4 months after the Northridge earthquake.
Okay.
And I had never, you grow up with them and they're just like a thing, right? Like, yeah, you'd heard about San Francisco. You'd seen the things on the TV, right? Like mm-hmm. to have, and then I ended up covering Cal State Northridge. One of the mm-hmm. great times of my career. I just loved it. The rubble that was all around that campus. And the stories that people told about being trapped inside of like collapsed apartment buildings. And that's what I think of is like, oh yeah, that's right. These things can really do damage. And we just live with them. Well, right. What about you before your exile and you, before like Moses, you brought your family back to California, before your exile, you lived here. You got any?
Not a ton. I mean, I guess to me, I was a baseball crazy 8-year-old when the Bay Series, the Bay Bridge yeah. Series, World Series, was interrupted. I was watching that game on TV. Here, you know, earthquakes and fires, when you grow up here, it's something, and I think you just sort of compartmentalize it probably to keep yourself sane, right? You go like, well, these are things that happen, but mostly other places, right? It's, you know, that was really it. Was I remember, you know, thinking even as a little kid, if it interrupted the World Series, which at the time, and I can't emphasize enough, you know, those Oakland A's, those San Francisco Giants were hugely popular. Even down here, Padres weren't any good, right? But, you know, I had the Dave Henderson batting gloves, the white ones with like the lime green. Everybody loved Ricky Henderson, you know, Dave Stewart. We can name all those guys. I remember thinking then kind of for the first time, oh, this is, you know, this isn't just something that happens far away. This could really impact us. And, you know, the fingers crossed, you know, it looks like at least at first glance today, there hasn't been any major damage. The epicenter of this is around Julian.
Amazing.
But just strange. And as somebody, again, who this is the first earthquake I can remember feeling in a long time. Very curious to see what my wife and kids think. Because I'm not sure they've been through one yet. So
that's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. We're here. I mean, we've already gotten emails from school saying everybody's fine, everything's safe, but really curious to see, you know, what getting under their desks for the first time was like for these kids and if it freaked them out or not. I mean, it might. We don't really talk about earthquakes in my house.
I love that you got emails from the schools. I think that's great. Like, I wonder if my parents even thought about me when we would have earthquakes in school. It's just like, you know. Certainly wasn't email.
No, they send a lot of emails, but that's good. That's a good thing. All right, Padres, Cubs, you know, we did not really get into pitching matchups, but it's pretty much the same as last week when the Padres played at the Cubs.
Two of the three. Yep.
So, you know, I don't think we need to go too deep into it here. What matters, Padres are 13-3, facing a team that really gave them some trouble last week.
And this team is good, man. They're one of the best hitting teams. And yeah, they really did a number, 23 walks, including it was eight or seven by Pavetta, who goes in the finale. Vasquez, I think, had seven or eight. It was one of the two. And then obviously Cease didn't pitch, but you're going to have to face Imanaga and Boyd again. Jameson Taillon and Cease go tonight. Anytime now, Dylan Cease will, you know, he pitches in bunches. Good, you know. He pitches good and he pitches bad. He's either going to be excellent or not so great. So anytime now he could take off. But this is a test. This is almost everything that the Rockies weren't. The Cubs are coming off taking 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. You know how you're famous, Kevin? Here's a good indicator that when you shave, it's a story. Dylan Cease, clean-shaven Dylan Cease making his – is this his clean-shaven Padres debut? Did he always have a mustache last year?
Yep, always had a mustache. This is something that people have not seen.
Yes, yes. Very interesting, very interesting. All right, Padres-Cubs, 3-game series starting tonight at Petco Park. Kevin, thank you for checking in. We'll talk again ahead of Friday's series against the Astros in Houston. But that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.